"Do You Say There Is No God?" An address by Herbert Eustace, CSB. In the Bible is a statement, emphatic, direct, an extraordinarily severe indictment. "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God." You have read, and doubtless many times pondered the statement, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God." Then you have asked yourself the question, "Am I the fool that has said in my heart, there is no God?" And you have unhesitatingly answered, "Not with my lips as a Christian scientist have I said it." But do you think that is what is meant when you have said with your lips? The statement reads, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God." The question must inevitably arise with the Christian scientist whether or not he is giving lip service to God while in his heart he is really saying there is no God. Whether, as in scriptural language, "He draweth nigh unto me with his mouth and honoureth me," while in his heart he is far from me. Each one has to determine the answer for himself. It is easy to say, "Of course not." But the Christian scientist's life, his ability instantaneously to dismiss evil as entity and to prove its powerless and nothingness, settles the question whether he is really saying in his heart, "There is no God." What of this world? It is impossible to view what seems to be taking place around us today and not be forced to the conclusion that the world at least is surely saying in its heart, "There is no God." Now, what concerns the metaphysician is, what is he doing? As the Christian scientist, he understands perfectly that the old religious belief, the old sanctimonious sense of a God in a heaven who is eventually going to gather all the good to himself, is largely gone. But in its place, what has he? We cannot give our time to a better purpose for the moment than to analyze this question and see exactly what we are doing and where we are standing, because that is of vital importance. The world is not over there, detached and apart from what is called me. It is here. It is me, my world, or I could have no consciousness of it. Whatever I cognize, whatever I am conscious of, must come as my own consciousness, my own being. And as the metaphysician, understanding this, I know it is true. Can you then say that this world is not your world? You cannot. Then if the world says there is no God, are not you saying there is no God? Subheading, what is God? What is this God that the world is repudiating? What does God mean? The sense of God as a personal deity has been rapidly disappearing under the light of the Declaration of Christian Science, made by Mrs. Eddy in 1866, that God is mind, and that all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. What then is this God? Is he something afar off, or is he the very mind of your real being? And if this mind is your mind, can you get anywhere unless you have a right understanding of what this mind is? I know each one of you here today has often asked himself the question, how do I know there is a God? And what is God to me? being able to establish for yourself that there is God, being convinced of God's isness, forever stops you from saying in your heart, there is no God. Thus your life becomes the evidence of your convictions. Subheading, the necessity for proof. Mrs. Eddy never hesitated to say that Christian Science would disappear from among mortals unless the truth of its declaration that there is only one mind is proved by practical demonstration. One's ability to abolish all finiteness, all limitation, all sin, disease, and death. Without such proof, Christian Science not only will be, but is lost. Who is there to prove it if you do not do so? The metaphysician is the one, and the one alone, who knows why he is a Christian Scientist. Each one of you knows this for himself. Your understanding identifies you, and if you do not prove Christian Science, how is it to be made manifest? Who else can prove it? It is understanding alone that will do it. Are you using your understanding? Yes. In proportion to your turning every thought unreservedly to the one mind as all in all. That is what being a Christian Scientist means. It is no harder to find mind as all in all than it is to find matter as all in all, and it is vastly more comfortable. Is your world declaring that matter is God? Is it going on the basis, let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die? If it is, will this usher you into the kingdom of heaven, into that understanding which enabled Jesus to bring all matter into subjection, and imbued him with such power that he spoke with absolute authority to every form of evil? As Mrs. Eddy says, with Christ, life was not merely a sense of existence, but a sense of might and ability to subdue material conditions. It must be the same with you. Subheading, the true meaning of joy. It would be foolish to say anything that might sound as though Christian Science were not the very essence of joy. That is farthest from the thought of the Christian Scientist, for certainly pleasure is no crime when it strengthens the influence of bad inclinations or lessens the activities of virtue. No sane Christian Scientist could possibly be mesmerized into thinking that there is any value or spirituality in a sad countenance or a joyless spirit. Joy is the natural quality of divine mind, the recognition of infinite perfection and well-being. Joy is the inborn result of the understanding of divine mind. For infinite perfection is the essential substance of mind. Perfection means, just as loveliness and beauty mean, everything right and everything in its place. Is not this the very essence of joy? You know that when you exclaim over the beauty or loveliness of an object or of an experience that has filled you with joy, you always mean and imply its perfection to the minutest detail. The least divergence from perfection mars its beauty instantly, and so mars your joy. Then the natural quality of the one perfect mind must be infinite joy, which joy can never be divorced from the activities of good. This is not the fleeting joy, of course, in the indulgence of the so-called senses in their cruder form, from a matter satisfaction standpoint. Christian Scientist does not have to say that to you as a Christian Scientist. The mind that you acknowledge as all power, as eternal, could not allow for one moment anything transitory or anything apart from itself. Spontaneously, it would cease to be all in all if it did. Because this is so, the so-called gratification of the senses, which in metaphysical terminology means a limited, finite, imperfect sense, could not possibly seem real to you. It is absurd to suppose that the joy of mind could have anything to do with the uncertain gratification of the material senses. The rock upon which to build. You declare, because I find myself consciously being, I know that God mind is, since I could not consciously be unless mind consciousness were actually a fact. So you know there is God. Then you have to prove it. There is no way of escape. Advancing in metaphysical understanding, the problems, the temptations besetting the Christian Scientist, are naturally more complex today than ever before, even as advancing in mathematics brings to light problems to solve, not thought of in the beginning. But this advance only gives added opportunity to discover and use more rules. So the subtle suggestions of human belief, appearing more insidious all the time, only seem to become more intricate in order to compel a fuller turning away from them, a higher consecration, thus showing that the only way to meet and master them is by thinking and acting more and more from the standpoint of the one mind as all in all. The higher truth lifts her voice, the louder will error scream, until its inarticulate sound is forever silenced in oblivion. If you truly believe that mind is all in all, what possible excuse can you have for dealing with anything but mind? Infinite mind includes all person, place or thing, or weather, or conditions, or government, or nations, or power, here and everywhere. According to your own declaration, is there anything left outside of the mind that is all in all? Of course you know there is not. Therefore you must insist upon finding mind as all in all. You must acknowledge that mind holds within itself all being, all position, all welfare, all everything. Do you turn to this mind, confident that it embraces within itself all there is? Or do you look in every other direction to see what material thing or circumstance is back of all that you are conscious of? It is wise to examine thoroughly one's practice of Christian Science and see where one is drifting. If we are going to be consistent Christian Scientists, we must apply to every single experience the truth we understand and see that there is nothing outside of the consciousness that is truth. Mrs. Eddy quotes, "Divine mind rightly demands man's entire obedience, affection, and strength. No reservation is made for any lesser loyalty. Obedience to truth gives man power and strength. Submission to error superinduces loss of power." Heading, "Remember in thy youth thy Creator." A pertinent question arises why do so many of the young people of today seem to be expressing a liberty running into license, a liberty for an occasion to the flesh, in which their seniors fondly imagine they never thought of in indulging? Is it because the fool has said in his heart there is no God? Is it because youth has no assurance in its heart, no true understanding of what God is or why God is? Every step taken away from the actual path of right has to be retraced. And no one can avoid this retracing any more than he can avoid correcting a mistake in mathematics. What is the remedy for this liberty, seemingly run into license, that is expressed so vigorously by the present generation? Is it not to establish such a sense of universal completeness, such a oneness with all that means infinity, that youth will be absolutely satisfied and interested in exploring the infinite activities, joys, and unfathomable opportunities of mind? The one who indulges in a personal sense is training himself in a very treacherous course, which he will have to turn from sooner or later. Personal sense or sin is accepting matter as substance, as entity. It is accepting finiteness as reality, as God. As Mrs. Eddy writes, the way to escape misery of sin is to cease sinning. There is no other way. Sin is the image of the beast to be effaced by the sweat of agony. It is a moral madness which rushes forth to clamour with midnight and tempest. Heading: no wrong condition is negligible. When a condition arises, as for example, that of a large territory being burned, as now appears to be taking place in this district, and people are believing that the temperature is unbearably high, do you as metaphysicians really recognize that the entire condition is a mental operation of malicious mind? I can see that the very presentation of that question causes you to think. Here you are, Christian scientists, and yet you are actually debating this point in your minds. Here you are, the salt, spiritual thinkers of the earth, a city that is set on a hill, and yet you have to wonder whether or not a raging fire is actually malicious mind operating as hypnotic suggestion. Do you think for a moment that fire is something outside of consciousness? Do you think that weather is something outside of consciousness? Or do you stick to your text that mind is all in all? How many of you have been honestly putting out that so-called destructive fire as nobody else on earth can understandingly do it? Can you afford to accept the lying suggestion of hypnotic mind that a destructive fire is actually taking place, is actually consciousness? You need not think that world affairs or business conditions will ever be handled if they are met with indifference or are accepted and tolerated. The discoverer and founder of Christian science did not allow that sort of thing ever herself. She insisted that weather and everything else be understood in its true sense as the very presence of mind, therefore God-governed, and then insisted that this right view of all things be made manifest practically, not merely theoretically. In the words of Wendell Phillips, one on God's side is a majority. Are you leaving the responsibility of these conditions to someone else? You are alone with God, and if you turn aside from God and leave this to the other fellow, you will experience just what the other fellow is, a liar and the father of it. In other words, all that the term hell means. In metaphysics, you can never think in terms of three and be a Christian Scientist. God is one, the one mind. God and the one man is the one mind and its infinite manifestation, and that is all in all. If you have the other fellow on whom you are relying, then you must have the devil with you. Ask yourself, what am I doing about conditions worldwide and otherwise? Am I accepting such conditions as seem to be obtaining in Russia and elsewhere? Am I mentally submitting to the vicious attacks on the executive and government of the United States, utterly oblivious to my power as a Christian Scientist to counteract all such conditions? Am I actually saying in my heart there is no God? If I am accepting one God, how can I possibly neglect to handle every single condition that presents itself? Heading, what is your goal? Why are you a Christian Scientist? To have an easy time? That brings no satisfaction. You cannot be happy until being is understood and so demonstrated. Formerly, the Christian Scientist may have accepted Christian Science as a belief, and so have caught reassuring glimpses of health, prosperity, and happiness. But that day is over. You now know that it is understanding alone that can satisfy you permanently, and that understanding is the goal of your consecration. It is impossible, of course, to escape health and prosperity, for they are omnipresent. Mrs. Eddy could not help being what the world calls a millionaire. She once said, in answer to a newspaper reporter's question, that she never could be a millionaire as long as there were so many poor. Did not the fact, then, that she later appeared to be a millionaire indicated that, to her sense, there were no longer so many poor? This invites the question, am I letting go of the idea that there are many poor, or am I attempting to base my prosperity on what can be seen with the eyes? If you do that, because of the changeableness of belief of what the eye see, you must not be surprised if that prosperity seems to appear and disappear. To a Christian Scientist, prosperity is not something that can vanish. God cannot become less than all in all. This God, this mind, that is all in all, is never less than all good. Therefore, you have infinite prosperity now and always. You are a law to your own prosperity. Be a law to it. To accept the material sense testimony instead of accepting understanding as an indication of prosperity would be identically the same as accepting a bodily condition as an indication of health. Health must be accepted as entirely apart from any testimony of the senses. You pay no attention to any sense evidence except to compel all testimony to bow to the mandate of mind. You insist upon its bowing to God good. You compel it to yield to the truth, and you never cease your demand until the corporeal senses correspond with the normal conditions of health and harmony. But you do this only in the same way that you make a lie yield to the truth. The lie is not a thing to you, but is just a lie. So you maintain the true in place of the untrue, and you never cease doing so until the false disappears. Jesus illustrated this in the parable of the man who asked his friend at night for 3 loaves. As he says, though he will not rise and give him because he is his friend, yet because of his importunity he will rise and give him as many as he needeth. You base your health on what you understand of mind. You base your wealth on the same understanding. Heading: Right Thinking Like the Seamless Robe. How can the metaphysician of all people, basing his health and wealth on mind, be satisfied to go on with the world conditions as they are? You know what constituted Cain a murderer was his repudiation of being his brother's keeper. He declared, "Am I my brother's keeper?" God, being all in all, does not this all in all include all brother, and therefore is not God the one brother? Cain accepted something apart from God as all in all when he said he was not his brother's keeper, thus rejecting responsibility for something which came to him as his consciousness. In doing this, he murdered his all-God, destroyed his sense of the allness of mind. When you pass by on the other side and say, "What have I to do with world affairs, foreign or domestic?" then are you not Cain? This mind, that is all in all necessarily, embraces within itself all that appears as any phase of the world, whether good or bad. Thinking must show forth the seamless robe today, the vesture of Christ without seam, just as it did metaphorically in the time of Jesus. There must be complete, absolute, undivided allegiance to the one mind as all in all. In other words, to purity or isness, which is without a single element contrary to itself, and which sees God as the infinite good always. As we read in the Bible, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Without this, there is no escape from problems, for problems are but the acceptance of a suppositional mind as mind. So world affairs are your affairs, and must be found as mind and as the activity of principle only, hence harmonious and perfect. What is all this that appears as quarrels, whether small or large, between husbands and wives, children, friends, neighbors, and nations? Is there someone to whom you do not speak, or whom perhaps you never wish to see again? Is there a lack of interest in countries that seem backward, or are obstreperous and unwilling to go forward except in their own way, and which may seem to you backward? Are you desirous of passing by on the other side? And if so, why? Is this outside of that which is appearing to you as consciousness? If that is the case, how can you cognize it at all? As the metaphysician, do you accept such things as reality? Or do you stump one and all instantly as suggestions to be promptly dismissed and destroyed through your understanding of the one mind as all in all? Subheading: Drunkenness Analyzed and Corrected. Take, for example, a drunkard. Is that which appears as a drunkard something outside of mentality, something outside of that which is being accepted as consciousness? A drunkard is not a person, place, or thing. It is a state of consciousness. Drunkenness is like Joseph's coat of many colours and many varieties, and it is destroyed, under whatever guise it comes, in the same way that sickness is destroyed. That which appears as a drunkard, in its simplest form and meaning, may seem perhaps to be interfering with your home life, or may pass you on the street. Nevertheless, regardless of the manner of its appearance, is it not all embraced in that which you are admitting as consciousness? In handling any claim, you understand there is always in belief an argument as to why the claim is present and why it is legitimate. It always claims to be there lawfully and properly. It claims a time when it began, a place where it is, matter or substance, wherewith it is formed, and last law by which it operates. In the process of destroying it, your business, as the activity of the one infinite intelligence that knows all there is to know about everything, is first to know that this infinite intelligence, being your mind, uncovers spontaneously whatever the particular claim may seem to be. This intelligence also brings to light what the arguments of the claim are, and the counter-arguments of Christ, of truth, that annihilate the arguments of evil. That which always appears as evident to the so-called material senses is simply the erroneous argument of the so-called malicious mind. If it were actually a thing in itself, instead of an argument, a mental claim or demand, it could not be cognizable. There is no way that you, being wholly conscious, and the activity of consciousness, in other words, mental, spiritual, could cognize anything material or apart from consciousness. The drunkard appears merely as a material object or person, but it is really a mental argument presenting itself spontaneously and supposititiously for the purpose of dispossessing you of what is really your mind, and of usurping the place of that mind. Actually, there is no drunkard. When you recognize that it is simply a mesmeric argument of malicious mind and not a condition, you meet it with the counter-argument of truth and annul its entire hypnotic influence. Let us analyze one phase of drunkenness. Suppose intelligence uncovered that the claim or argument appearing as drunkenness was really an anatomical condition of irritation or inflammation of the pneumogastric nerve. Materia medica will tell you that often this condition is the cause of chronic inebriety. What would be your counter-statement to this argument of malicious mind? Would it not be, since mind embraces within itself all that you call pneumogastric nerve, and since there is nothing external to this mind that is infinite, to inflame anything, the perfection and continuity of the pneumogastric nerve is assured? You would continue your argument until you are absolutely convinced that this one mind could have no appearance of a pneumogastric nerve unlike itself in any respect. Then, when fully satisfied on this point, you would know that a supposedly irritated pneumogastric nerve was not, after all, the claim. What then is really the claim? The same old lie of the ever-talking serpent, that there is a mind apart from the one mind that can operate as hypnotic suggestion and appear as a claim of drunkenness, whether of a person, a nation, or a world. Remember, the body politic is not different in any way from the body personal. As there is only one body, even as there is only one mind, so, suppositionally, there is only one false sense of body and one false sense of mind. Therefore, the drunkard can appear as a man, a nation, or a world. It is all one. Heading: the claim, its recognition and remedy. The root of the tree at which you lay the axe is the claim that there is malicious mind, in other words, that malicious mind is. But there is no malicious mind, since God, the one mind, is, and is all that is. It is through the realization of this allness of God as the one and only mind, and this alone, that there can ever be any healing accomplished. Do you believe that this suppositional isness of malicious mind embraces within itself all that appears as the claim of destructive fires, bad business conditions, governmental problems, in fact, as every phase of mortal existence? If you do, what are you doing about it? And if nothing, then what is your purpose in life, or in being a Christian Scientist? Are you like the silly mortal who is just doing a little work to get a little money, to buy a little food, to build a little muscle, to do a little work to get a little money, to buy a little food, and so on? Each one of you in his heart is the genuine Christian Scientist, the right knower, enlisted to lessen evil, disease, and death. Now is the time to let this true purpose and its tremendous power as the one mind govern you. Mrs. Eddy once said of a class of 50-odd that there were enough in this class, if they were of one mind and practiced what they knew, to bring in the millennium. Jesus demonstrated this and knew that true understanding was actually all power in heaven and in earth. You have that understanding. Are you using it? Or are you going on indifferent to everything except caring for a petty, finite sense, satisfied if you are in good health and keep a balance in the bank, clothes on your back, food in your larder, and roof over your head? Are you saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace? Would not that really be what is back of indifference? Are you satisfied to go on in ignorance and finiteness? If you are not satisfied, you must prove it. Subheading: the one thing needful. Mrs. Eddy urged constant prayer, and Paul urged prayer without ceasing. But neither Mrs. Eddy nor Paul had any thought of prayer as related in the slightest to getting down on one's knees and remaining there constantly. That would be absurd. What was meant was constant right knowing, in season, out of season, communion with mind, knowing, thinking, actively accomplishing right. It is impossible to do anything without thought. You cannot perform the slightest act without thought. If thought ceases to operate as the motive power of the body, an undertaker is sent for. Thought controls every action of the body. Whether or not individually you are aware of a conscious effort makes no difference. It is the mind operating as the mind of the individual that is consciously aware. Because thought is the substance of all that you ever do, surely it is just as easy to think rightly as to think wrongly. What is it that seems to be always at work, endeavouring to stop right thinking? Is it not our being satisfied just to go ahead with the material round of affairs and being at peace if we can make both ends meet, not only financially but in every way? The politician wants the vote. The social aspirant wants success. And so the round goes on, all bending their aims and energies to make their particular ends meet. Martha, cumbered with material serving, was told, "But one thing is mindful, to find God, the one mind as all in all." To act and think from the standpoint of mind God, never admitting a third, is absolutely necessary. Thy maker, mind, must be found as thy husband, thy wife, thy friend, thy neighbour, thy child, thy business, thy government, thy world, thine all in all. It is no more difficult to know this than to imagine the impossible from a mind standpoint, that something outside of mind, because it appears over there, is your husband or your wife or your universe, and so forth. Subheading: What is the unrest and turmoil? The world of mind is never in turmoil. Your world is not in turmoil. It is hypnotic suggestion that is the turmoil, and that is in the turmoil. Many suggestions of evil are now appearing under the guise of good and of freedom that have never been seen before. They come today with, "My Lord delayeth his coming, so why not indulge this sense or that?" Yes, why not? The fool hath said in his heart, "There is no God, no mind that is all in all." Are you holding yourself more strictly to account each day, and never lowering your standard in Christian science? Evil is ever ready with its pulling down of your standard suggestions. Sin makes deadly thrusts at the Christian scientist, as ritualism and creed are summoned to give place to higher law, but science will ameliorate mortal malice. The Christianly scientific man reflects the divine law, thus becoming a law unto himself. That was a quote from Mrs. Eddy. If you indulge, even in a small degree, in the full sense of anger or jealousy, or yield to any of the petty vices or allurements of human belief, is it not easier to fall a victim the next time? Is not your mortal sense dimmed just that much? There is nothing over there to be jealous of or to long for. Your understanding, be it ever so small, is the safest guide for you to hold to, for through it you establish completeness here and now and silence the turmoil of the senses. As we read in Science and Health, man's existence is a problem to be wrought in divine science. the error of supposed life and intelligence in matter is dissolved only as we master error with truth, not through sin or suicide, but by overcoming temptation and sin shall we escape the weariness and wickedness of mortal existence and gain heaven, the harmony of being. Heading: No difference between one wrong and another. You are not deceived into thinking that one form of evil is worse than another form. There is not the slightest difference between one wrong and another. Whether it appears in a little form or a big form, there is no difference. It is only self-righteousness and hypocrisy that tempt the metaphysician vainly to imagine that there is any difference between a desire to indulge in the belief of so-called bodily pleasure, or in the belief of pain, a fire, a bandit, a murderer, a government upset, a financial turmoil, or any appearance of finiteness, no matter in what form it is presented. You ask, if there is no difference between one form of wrong and another, why should the married person countenance lust within the bonds of matrimony if it is wrong outside of these bonds? The whole belief of lust is fundamentally based on a belief of incompleteness, and that is just what is wrong with the belief of the world today. In the sight of principle, one form of lust is not different from another. It is childish to suppose that there is any difference. All forms of lust are the belief that there is something satisfying and attainable over there that is not here, that mind, your mind, does not spontaneously embrace all satisfaction, all completeness, all good for you. In regard to the thought of lust, Mrs. Eddy points out that wisdom in human action begins with what is nearest right under the circumstances, and thence achieves the absolute. But it is not even considered wisdom in human action to permit licentiousness outside of the bonds of matrimony. Human belief in its gradual destruction through a closer approximation to the oneness of mind has determined that one husband, one wife is the true basis of action, and so has ruled that a departure from this oneness is illegitimate, and being illegitimate is, to this human belief, wrong. It has gone thus far in its condemnation of lust. It will not be able to stop there, for in its imitation of mind, it will demand also complete oneness. As a Christian Scientist, however, you do not make a so-called differentiation between evil and evil. While you do not and could not condemn persons, for to you all is mind, you do condemn every claim of evil. As you clearly understand divine mind as the one and only person, the one infinite person, what must naturally take place with every form of licentiousness? The understanding of man's oneness with God, and that there is only one mind, infinite good, supplying all good, all completeness to all, makes every claim of licentiousness spontaneously disappear. Remember, the temptation is to make something of lust in the form of bodily desire, but to make nothing of it as destructive fire, as conditions in Russia, China, India, or as abuses in our own communities, all of which are lust themselves. These are all forms of the human mind raging and lusting after completeness, after satisfaction without principle. There is absolutely no difference between them. You have to be just as conscientious as getting rid of one lie as you are in getting rid of another. Wrong always means the suggestion of a mind apart from the one mind. Heading: Death will not end the dream. It seems as though in desperation one cried, "What is going to arise to awaken me out of the lethargy of human belief? Am I going to dream on until I face the belief of death?" But can one go on idling along up to that point, and then foolishly imagine that he will attain some wonderful awakening through death? That is not possible. The one who dies will instantly awaken to the fact that he has not died, or changed in the least his estimate of life, and that he has to go right on and work out the problem, the reality of being. Mortals, because of superstitious teaching, both religious and secular, are skeptical when told that nothing takes place at death except the mere fact of discovering that they are not dead, and that they have, as science points out, but passed the mortals of a new belief. They ask, "How do you know what death does? You have not tried it." You know what death must bring forth as definitely as you know that 2 times 2 billion is 4 billion, because you know that 2 times 2 is 4. Consciousness could not possibly change at the point of death, for if it did change, as mortal imagine, it would be annihilated, not conscious. Mortals who go on thinking that the hereafter will be better than the here are dreaming in vain. For where the tree falleth, there it shall be. As one dies, so he awakes. As Mr. Zeddy writes, if the change called death destroyed the belief in sin, sickness, and death, happiness would be won at the moment of dissolution, and be forever permanent. But this is not so. Perfection is gained only by perfection. They who are unrighteous shall be unrighteous still, until in divine science Christ truth removes all ignorance and sin. The only personal or bodily transformation that can occur at death is that the particular erroneous disease or sense which was being accepted as consciousness, and which declared it could kill, and seemed to make good its threat, will vanish. For did it not automatically prove itself a liar by the fact that its victim still found himself alive? When a lie is seen as a lie, it vanishes. So that particular erroneous sense or disease will have disappeared. Self-evidently, consciousness cannot die, for there is nothing about mind to kill, and neither can its embodiment or body die, for even an instant. The conviction that death is inevitable makes hypocrites of all who believe in it. It makes the believer in it turn aside from the honest cultivation of present problems and cultivate the folly of procrastination. If you really knew that there was no death, and that you had to go on living forever, here and now, you would quickly insist that your outlook on friendship and environment changed at once for the better.